It's Thursday, February 27th, 2014, and welcome to episode 162 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And we're going to be doing a little bit different format this time for the show. Mike Gioia is not with us right now, so we're going to be actually making two recording sessions. And hopefully I'll be able to get a hold of Mike tomorrow, which is February 28th. And we'll do our security spotlight segment, and then we'll splice it together. And at the end of the day, we'll have a show posted tomorrow.
And nobody will ever know the difference.
No, hopefully not, if we do our jobs right.
You know, that makes me think of, like, I listen to different programs on satellite radio, and they have different hosts. They're in different cities. They're not even in the same room. And I think, how hard would that be to do a whole talk show and not step on each other's toes and things like that whenever you're in... I wonder if they have monitors where they're kind of Skyping or FaceTiming.
A lot of them do. We actually just did a Skype session with Thailand just the other day.
Wow.
And the delay was noticeable. Yeah. You know, they're completely on the other side. I think there's like 13 hours time zone difference with it, but it was a noticeable delay. So, I mean, you get used to it. You just have to pause, you know, whenever you finish your thought, mm-hmm. and then have that delay. And then the person responds with a little bit of delay, and it seems like forever, but, you know, really it's just, you know, 2-3 seconds.
Right.
I also need to mention something a little bit different. If you subscribe to Tech Talk for Teachers on iTunes, particularly if you're using EIU, iTunes U, that is going to be going away soon. I don't know if it's going to be going away at the end of this month or you know, coming up shortly. But if you are subscribing to EIU, iTunes U, or in the iTunes Store, you may need to resubscribe with our RSS feed. Here at EIU, they're going to be shutting down the EIU iTunes U service, so that may affect your subscription. So if that happens, please come back. I will put a link in the show notes to our other RSS feed. In fact, I'll just mention it here. It's feeds.feedburner.com/techtalkforteachers. That's Tech Talk, the number 4, teachers. So we use a Feedburner account, mm-hmm. and this is all the magic behind the scenes, you know, that we normally don't have to worry about. But since they are shutting down that service, you know, we may have a few listeners affected by that.
And that's something that we've kind of talked about a couple different times, that it's interesting how those have been changing, and mm-hmm. and with my Google Reader and all that, mm-hmm. that was an issue. And so, you know, what's the reason for that? Is it new technologies are emerging, or?
Well, in this particular case, they were having to change some interface requirements in writing, and there just wasn't enough traffic, I guess. So they decided, you know, rather than rewrite some things, they were just going to shut down. I think, you know, Tech Talk for Teachers obviously was using that service.
Right.
But a large number of our listeners either go directly to, you know, the Tech Talk for Teachers blog,
right.
and just click on that little play. Play button, or, you know, as I said, you can just in any podcatcher, you type in what's called the RSS feed.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we've been using Feedburner since 2007.
Right. Yeah. That now. One's been around.
So, and there were rumors that it, you know, was part of Google mm-hmm. shutting services down. That is a Google property. There were rumors that it was going to be shut down, but knock on wood here. so far, we're okay with that. And that's a free service, a great service.
It is.
So, you know, we've got a little bit of mechanical things to worry about. So, like I said, if we happen to go away, please look us up. You can always go to the EIU ITC website. That's just eiu.edu/ITC. And we've got links on that page. And I will also put this Feedburner link in the show notes. So just a heads up from that. If you happen not to get it, please resubscribe.
Don't want to miss it.
First today, I thought we'd have just a little conversation here of some changes and some things that are on our radar screens. And Cindy, one of the things that you just mentioned to me, you might be searching for a new phone.
That's right. I've had my Droid for a couple years now, and I'm going to be eligible for a new one. I really didn't think I was going to change, but then over a little vacation, my one-year-old nephew was playing with my phone and decided to bite it and bit into the screen and cracked it across. And so it's like, okay, I need to start thinking about this. And so, yeah, I really want to look and see what's going to work. Now, the three of the four in our family have iPhones. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one that doesn't. And I'm not opposed to it, but...
Well, it's hard once you get used to a larger screen for me.
Exactly.
With the way my eyes are going here today, the bigger the screen, I definitely appreciate.
Right. So I'm not 100% committed to anything. And I do want to look at, you know, there are a couple that are even the bigger, almost the iPad mini size.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I take my purse everywhere I go. Maybe that's something to consider.
Yeah, those are kind of getting into that phablet territory, the cross between a phone and a tablet. They're calling phablets now.
Yeah.
But right now actually is a very good time because Mobile World Congress is going on over in Europe. So a lot of the manufacturers are announcing their new lines. They, you know, many of these won't be available, you know, going into the fall whenever they do the refresh. But I'm the same way. I think my contract's up in November. Part of me, you know, wants to start that search. Mm-hmm. But as I said, part of me, it's like these fees are getting really expensive. So it's like, how bad? And when you have some redundancy, you know, like in my case, I have a lot of technology around. I've got the Chromebook. I've got a tablet. You know, I've got a desktop. It's like, you know, how many devices does one person, you know, really need?
Right.
And then you throw in a data plan or two or three on top of that.
But, and we were laughing because, you know, we have so many talking minutes and we barely scratch the surface of those, and we still stay way under our data minutes.
Yeah, and even what I was noticing, I was looking at our data plans. I'm just not using it on the phone very much because, like I said, whenever I have a Chromebook or a tablet with me, you know, 90% of the time I'm within Wi-Fi, you know, whether home or here or, you know, at Starbucks or wherever it might
be.
So that's getting a little bit better. The other thing that I have on my radar screen, we're probably only going to do one show next month in March because spring breaks right in the middle of the month, kind of our halfway here at the EIU for the spring semester. So the students will be going off for spring break. And the other thing that I have kind of left over that's still kind of nagging at me is the Chromebook series of blog postings that I started for our ITC Chronicles blog. And I do have at least three or four more postings I would like to make to kind of share some of the things that I found. I've been using this Chromebook. I've got an Acer C720P. It's a touchscreen Chromebook. I've been using it pretty extensively the last couple of months. And for the most part, I've been, you know, very satisfied with it. There are a few limitations, and most notably, you know, with a Chromebook, you are severely handicapped if you're not around Wi-Fi.
Yep.
Because it uses the Google Apps ecosystem. But there are some workarounds for that as well, and I need to post those. So just wanted to kind of give you a little bit of a idea what's on our radar screen, what we've been doing. And I kind of use this time as kind of a way to force myself to make some of these postings and things. You know, we always talk, I need to do this. And I don't know about you, but, you know, once I kind of set that goal on things, you know, I have to establish that timeline, deadline to get things done.
Well, and I feel like I'm, you know, this year is just getting away from me already.
Oh, yes.
I can't believe that the kids the young men and women on campus are getting ready to go on spring break.
Yeah.
It's like, how in the world did that happen
halfway
already?
Through the semester,
right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just trucking along.
Yeah. Okay, so be sure to stay tuned. And I mentioned in the opening introduction there, if you have any issues, that check out our new FeedBurner link. So don't forget about that. Okay, we're back, and Mike Gioia has joined us today. Today's
Hello.
Friday. Hello, Mike. Welcome. We had to record this in two different segments, so this is kind of going to be a standalone security spotlight, and we'll just patch it in.
Okay. Well, I mean, from what we had the last time we met, which seems like forever, but...
It's been a month.
Yeah, it still feels longer than that. We had more hacking going on, more security breaches, and I think that's going to be the norm. But the disturbing trend, mainly for me, was that we had two major breaches. One just was notified yesterday of universities and their data. The first big one, which was really big, I think it was 307,000 records of an identity with Social Security numbers, was at the University of Maryland. And they basically got into the whole human resource database. And pretty much sounded like since from 1998 they downloaded everything. What else was disturbing about that? Usually we see is typically phishing. That's kind of how the Target breach happened, when we finally figured out and got the report from it through a third party that Target used. It was through a phishing, stolen credentials through phishing. But this one, they haven't given a full report. But it's, the way it sounds like it was, they circumvented a bunch of security systems, and it wasn't through phishing. They said it was very elaborate and technical. But so I'll wait to see what the report is for that. And then the second one that actually just got notified this week was Indiana University had a breach of over 100,000 records from all across their campuses. They really haven't said, there isn't much detailed yet, it's still too soon, but exactly how they got into those systems too. So kind of a disturbing trend. We're seeing a lot more of the universities being targeted for the data.
Yeah, and as a user, you just feel so helpless because you don't necessarily know this is going on. And in what we've talked about in the past, like with the Target, you know, credit card breach and things like that, those usually don't get reported till like a month or so afterwards, you know, after an investigation or whatever.
Right.
So you've got that time period in there.
There's that unknown. But this has brought, the Target breach especially has brought to light on how there is no regulated practices in reporting breaches to consumers and the private individual out there. And that it looks like they're going to try to, we'll see if it ever happens, but the government is looking to pass legislation that will require companies and entities, you know, organizations, a certain way they have to report in a faster response as opposed to, you know, Target. You know, the rumor is that they waited till after the holiday season to report it because they didn't want to affect their sales.
I kind of thought the same thing, you know, coming in January.
You know, if that was true or not, I don't know. You know, we'll have to see. I do know when we have, if we ever have some type of breach or something like that, again, it's about getting it out there as fast as you can, but it has to be accurate and complete. So you don't want to rush out. I mean, like we had a breach of, you know, 100,000 accounts and then find out it was really 1,000.
Right.
You get everyone all in hysteria and then it's like, oh, it, you know, wasn't that many.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that. We don't want to be like the media was there for a while back when they were reporting things that weren't accurate because they wanted to be the first one to get it out there.
Right. Yeah, and in the media circles, you know, you kind of have those cycles of stories and things. And as you said, that's been in the news a lot lately, and they've had plenty to report on.
But, I mean, hopefully from all this, I hope that everyone, including organizations and the individual, realize that, you know, you need to take care of your information. You know, we're coming to the point where the password isn't a way to secure your stuff.
Right.
It's a piece of it now, but using a password alone isn't enough.
Right. And I think the credit card industry, I've been seeing some reports and things about possibly, you know, moving to the PIN chip combination possibly next year. But what that requires is a complete retooling of, you know, all the retailers and
the devices and stuff that they use to handle that equipment. Again, though, a lot of that stuff is already in place because these companies are worldwide.
Right.
And Europe's already
been doing it for a long time.
Right. Yeah. It's just a different model of piece of equipment. I think our bookstore even has the chip reading models.
Yeah.
Because some of the banks or some of the credit card issuers are using the smart chip. I think MasterCard has already been using it with some banks. You know, our IDs have that same, Panther cards have that ID set up in them already, the chip. And you can set up the PIN.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're coming to the age where two-factor authentication has to happen.
Yeah. I've been using it a lot more on, you know, some of the cloud services and things. But, you know, again, these conversations have certainly raised my awareness and, you know, just kind of that need to regularly change my password because you just never know.
Right. And I'm sure, you know, it's interesting when you look back. I'm sure the kind of resistance to this was the same time when people were resistant to start putting deadbolts on their doors.
Yeah.
Back in the day, of course, you know, for me, that was just commonplace to have a deadbolt on top of your regular door lock.
Right.
But, you know,
and I think that will also happen too with the hackers and things, and maybe some cases made example in the legal system or something that this is a crime, you know, committing fraud and stealing identities and things certainly is a crime.
Right.
And there will be consequences for that. So, you know, on the hacker front, but, right.
And you know, you're exactly right. The UK arrested a major hacker, but he's accused of hacking into like the Federal Reserve here in the US and the FBI databases. I think the UK arrested him to extradite him here for you know, those criminal charges.
Yeah. So, as always, you know, we just have to be careful. And then the other thing here, kind of toward the tail end of February and things, Apple was in the news again. I saw they had some of their, well, I guess affects both iOS and OS 10.
Yeah, pretty much any Apple device, the security flaw with the certificates.
It's like, oh, never mind.
They're
calling it go to fail, I think.
Right. You know, when you use, they're talking about SSL or socket security layer certificates, and you know, I issue those out for our servers and stuff here. But for the common person, when you connect to a web page, you usually look for that little lock that means you are on an SSL session. It means your connection's secure because the data being passed between what you're seeing and wherever you're connected at the other end is encrypted.
Yeah.
And it prevents what they call a man-in-the-middle attack, where someone in between that, from you and wherever your information is going to, actually intercepts the data and can read it. But if it's encrypted, they can't read it because it's all gibberish. From what we know with the Apple, and they're being kind of quiet about it, which is, you know, not okay. But that if anyone had admin rights or privileges on a network, so anyone, if you're sitting on an open wireless network at Starbucks,
right,
or you know, I think the Walmart here has an open wireless network.
Anyone, yeah, public Wi-Fi access.
Yeah, anyone can be a privileged user on that network. And the SSL encryption wasn't working on these devices. It wasn't actually encrypting the data, so anyone could see that. So if you're doing banking information, all your passwords are being passed.
Yeah, in the clear.
Wow.
Yeah.
And from what I heard, it was like that for a year and a half.
Yeah, I've been seeing the 18 months out there. But yeah, again, you know, we're just kind of at the mercy of the software makers, right, and things. And we just never know, even if we do everything right, you know, on our end. So again, you know, kind of another thing, if somebody were to happen to intercept one of those, you'd have to do some work to do it. But I mean, if you're doing nefarious activities, you know.
Right.
But again, if somebody got that, a need to change that password regularly.
Yes.
Problem for me and so many of us is we have so many different accounts, and we're back to this, you know, this old problem of, you know, every time you sign up for something, you have to have an account with this, you know, company, this other company, whatever. And
you have to have a password for all of them, and then people use the same password for multiple places.
Yeah.
And then when you get hacked at one place, they can get into all
right,
other places.
Which is so, why you don't want to use the same password. Yeah. And it's like you've got to come up with a system, and it just becomes onerous, you know, after a while. And then I think some people, it's like, you know, what can I do?
Right. And like I said, that's why multi-factor authentication, two-factor authentication is better, because you can have a password and it can be simple, but if you don't have the other piece, like a card, smart card, or something that's on you, you know, a hacker from across the world, if they don't have that extra piece, they still can't get in there, if they figure out your password.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this, because I've done this on a couple of my Google accounts and things, you know, whenever you enable that, and it sends me a text with the code and things to punch in. But there's also that checkbox that says, always trust this device.
Yeah.
You know, Google's great about, you know, whenever you sign in with a username and password, there's always that checkbox, remember me on this device, which from a security standpoint, you know, that's usually, in my experience, has been checked by default. And it's like, I usually uncheck that.
Right. Yeah, it's hard because, again, and this is something I run into every day here on campus, is we want to make it convenient for the users, but we also need to make it secure.
Right.
So if you make it inconvenient for the users, they complain, and then we forego security and protection measures because it's not easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not secure. For a while, I mean, Firefox, if you were saving your passwords in Firefox, you could go to the configuration file on your Firefox and look at all their passwords.
And Chrome had that, too. I don't know if they fixed it since then or not.
I'm not sure. But, you know, if you were saving passwords and accounts, you could view them in clear space.
Right, in clear. Yeah, that's just crazy.
Yeah. So anyone could just walk up to you, if you didn't lock your computer, anyone could just walk up to your computer and just...
I think that explanation was exactly what you said. It's stretching that border between, well, it needs to be convenient versus, you know, the same thing with making your passwords so convoluted that you can't remember them, and they write them down on a piece of paper and stick it, you know, next to your computer.
Well, and I've seen some pretty interesting new technology coming out, and I'm not, and this is not really my tech pick because I have something else for that that's not security related, but there's a company in the UK that we actually follow on Twitter. It's called PixelPin. And what they do is for websites that's supported by it, you can set a picture through their program that will come up, and then your password on that pixel pin, or they call it the pin, I think, is like certain locations on the picture.
Right.
So like if you have a picture of your family.
Right. Windows 8's got that option.
Yeah, it's got all, you can click on certain faces in a certain order, and then it'll authenticate you to that system, which is a really cool thing because it's something you know, and it's like there's no way you can really, I mean, you could sit there and try to brute force it, but again.
Right. I don't know on the Windows 8 because I do use that, but I think it's only 3 points of touch, which, you know, if somebody's looking over your shoulder and seeing that, that's, you know, that certainly wouldn't meet corporate security standards.
Sure.
But, you know, for unlocking a device or something, certainly better than nothing, which many people still have nothing, you know, on even their phone. So.
Yeah.
So. My technology pick of the week this week is a website that measures readability scores. I was recently talking to Brian Murley, who is a professor of journalism here at EIU. And as we run into each other in the hallways and things, we're always comparing apps and said, hey, have you seen this? Have you seen this? And this is one that he mentioned to me just today. And the website is HemingwayApp.com. It's Hemingway, like Ernest Hemingway, one M. HemingwayApp.com. And what I love about this site is, one, it's a website. It's not an app, so I don't have to load it on like 30 iPads, you know, individually. So you can just go to a website. And they just have a little text box that you can copy and paste text into. And it reminds me a little bit of Wordle. You know, many educators use Wordle where you copy and paste in, and it analyzes the most frequent words and things. So it's very, very easy to use. I copy and paste a little snippet of text, and it gives me a readability score. And I just happened to post the last ITC Chronicles blog. We did a little Valentine's bulletin board segment, kind of showed how to some of the tricks and things that we use here in the ITC to make bulletin boards. So I just copied a little snippet of it, and it says the readability level for this one is grade 12. Now, Brian Murley's, you know, professor in journalism, so they're interested in, you know, audience and, you know, writing to this. So he gave me this little little app tip, so I thought I'd pass it along. Brian has also written a little article about this Hemingway app for writers, so I will provide a link in the show notes to that. But it's a very easy to use, something good for teachers to establish just, you know, a ballpark readability. Mm-hmm. Now, being, you know, a former English teacher, there's all kinds of sophisticated formulas, you know, and different methods for determining reading scores. And if you happen to, or if you're using Microsoft Office Word, either 2010 or 2013. I'm not sure if it's in the 2007 version or not. But both of those, actually, you can establish a readability score. And I think they use the Fleisch-Kincaid method for that. And I will also, in Microsoft Word, let me come out here and find something. If you enable this, it's under Options. I'll provide a little link to and how to set this up. But in Office 2013, I think if I go to Options and go down to the proofing choice, there's a little checkbox that says show readability statistics. So if that box is checked, every time you do a spell check, it'll give you a readability score. So by default, I think it's not checked. So I checked that. I said, okay. And then I'm going to go up here and go to my review tab. Click spelling and grammar. Now I've got like a 3-page document in here. And this one's going to be very tough because this is one of my Chromebook blog postings. But I can come out here and just ignore all these little, because I'm using keyboard shortcuts, all these little control plus alt and all these other things. It doesn't understand that. But let me just copy just one short paragraph here that hopefully doesn't have too much. And come out here and just go to review tab. Spelling, and right here it gives me my word count. So I had a couple paragraphs I pasted in here, 76 words, 397 characters, 2 paragraphs, 3 sentences, and my Fleisch reading ease is 37.5, and Fleisch Kincaid grade level score is 14.3. So particularly elementary teachers, you know, that's a fairly, you know, high mm-hmm. level there because
exactly.
I'm dealing with technical terms, so right. I'm not sure how accurate, you know, some of these things are. But it's kind of, you know, an eye-opening experience to go out there, you know, again, depending upon your audience. And I think they always say, we'll ask Brian. I'm trying to get him on the show for next time, see mm-hmm. if we can do a little segment. But I think newspapers always kind of shoot for, what, an eighth grade?
See, I was thinking about that, and I was thinking it was lower
yeah.
in that. And, you know, as educators, sometimes we get caught up in our disciplines or mm-hmm. what we're doing that we start speaking the lingo.
Yeah.
And so when we do create online resources or homework help things for parents mm-hmm. or send things home, it is a good idea to do that to make sure, because you may have second languages mm-hmm. or very different backgrounds, that if you're sending a document home that is a very high, you know, reading level, mm-hmm. that you may discourage somebody from really paying attention to it.
Yeah.
And so it's a good, kind of a good habit to get into. The other thing with word counts is that I've discovered, man, it's hard to limit the number of words. Yeah. I recently had something I wrote that needed to be around 600 words. I started out at 3,000 and kept cutting down, and it was so hard to yeah. do.
That's where those tweets come in handy.
Right, because you and I were just talking about that, how teachers are using tweets because it really makes students focus on the main idea or key points that they want to communicate. And so instead of the, you know, giving all the fluff to try and fill space, it's a lot harder to limit yeah. your word count than it is to expand.
And that really utilizes the higher order thinking skills, because you are just really turning over, you know, those different phrases and, you know, reevaluating and all of that. And, you know, writing's tough work.
It is. And, you know, when you're reading something, you can read a pair. And I mean, we've all done that where we read something and you kind of forget and you read the same page again because yeah. you really weren't paying attention. And so, you know, being able to key in on those main points and the important words that are in
yeah.
documents, and, you know, man, that's a skill we're going to use your entire life,
yeah.
no matter what you're doing. So anytime we can practice those skills, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And that is a neat tool to do, because sometimes, you know, I've had it before where I've written something thinking I sound really intelligent, and not so much.
Yeah.
So
I've also noticed, having written, you know, many blog posts and things, I mean, it's an excellent way for teachers to share with other teachers. I mean, it's very personal. It's very practical. I really appreciate people that take the time to put those thoughts down, mm-hmm. you know, into words. And people don't realize how much time, blood, sweat, and tears go into a post. Mm-hmm. I can tell you from practical experience, these Chromebooks posts that I'm making now, you know, it might be a short article, like you say, 600,000 words. It's not much, but literally, and this is no joke, I can spend 4 or 5 hours putting together,
yeah.
and you can read it like in 5 minutes, you know, less than 5 minutes. But the tips and things, I mean, what I'm hoping that people get out of there, some of the things, you know, it's like solving a technical problem. It's like finding, you know, what's wrong, diagnosing the problem the mm-hmm. first time is so difficult and time consuming. But once you know the solution, you can, you know,
right.
fix it immediately. But it's getting over that learning hump, you know, to go out there and, you know, find out what the solution is. And again, those higher order thinking skills and the diagnosing the problem and then coming up, you know, with an alternative solution for it. So,
but it's one of those things. It's funny because, like, we've gone to such a bulleted list society
yeah.
that we don't want text in paragraphs. We want bulleted lists and things. And actually, remember on the snow day, there was that World Digital Education
yeah.
thing, and
yeah.
I did that whole online mm-hmm. thing with that. But they were tweeting as it was going. I despise those tweets because they go too fast.
Mm.
You can't keep up with
no
who's
flow.
Who
yeah,
and
no thread.
Who's talking about what, and it jumps from topic to topic. And I hate those.
Yeah.
I have no...
Well, that was just a case of being overwhelmed, and it is nationwide too.
Yeah,
so they're just
yeah.
you know thousands
I mean, it was
of teachers.
It was just constantly rolling,
yeah. Yeah.
and I'm like, I don't even know what we're talking about
yeah.
now. And then people that knew each other, like, oh hey, how are you? Oh, I'm good. It's like,
Yeah. Yeah. That's context is everything. Uh-huh. You know, if you don't have that context and things out there.
Yeah.
But there are many, you know, the Twitter chats, and it depends upon, you know, the very popular ones. You're always going to experience kind of that overload just because of the number of people.
Right.
But there are instructors and professors using it, you know, within class for a very specific thing or within your personal learning network. Everybody has their own comfort level, their own style and things, and we come to rely upon, you know, just like in real mm-hmm. life, you know, we know who's kind of the expert in whatever area. Mm-hmm. And I just had another experience today. I had a question, something that I didn't know about, and I posted a little tweet, and within, I would say, 5 minutes, I had two responses from two people I respect a great deal that know what they're doing, mm-hmm. and right there's the answer.
Right.
So, you know, the PLN and the Twitter chats and those relationships are extremely important. But as I said, context is everything with that. And that takes time. And that's what, if you're new to Twitter, that's what's so frustrating, because it takes the time and commitment to build.
And I guess it depends on, too, if you want superficial,
right,
it's there. If you want in-depth, you're going to have to do something else, you know. So.
Yep. Anything worth doing is going to take a little bit of effort.
Exactly.
Okay, Cindy, what do you have?
Well, you know, in my attempt to make spring come a little bit quicker.
Can't come quick enough.
Right? No, man. We, my future daughter-in-law and I signed up for a color run. It's a 5K, and apparently you wear light-colored clothes, and they splash you with color while you're running.
No.
I don't know. But I have never done a 5K, anything like that at all. So all of my friends were saying, you've got to check out the website and the plan, Couch to 5K. And it's a whole training program. It's online, just a regular website, and it tells you each week what to do. And they swear, and all my friends say, that this works. That by the time you get to the 5K, you're good to go. So I've been looking at that, and I found an app on my phone that is like, it's like Running Double, I believe, is the name of it. But it's really cool because you can chart your progress, and then also it'll pull from your music and make playlist.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
You can run to mm-hmm. listen to it, you know, get mm-hmm. that Rocky music going, mm-hmm. inspiration, and that. And so you can do, you know, fun runs, and but it specifically has like the Couch to 5K. And
so you like punch in your times and things.
Yeah, it's, I mean, very, you know, you just literally, you start out training very slowly. It really sounds too good to be true, so I'm skeptical here in that. But you know, it walks you through the training program. And so I've got, you know, the regular Couch to 5K that I looked at, but then this little thing on my phone. So, you know, since you're going to have your phone with you, you pop your headphones in and do all that, which I still have to, I need some new headphones, but more importantly, I need a Bluetooth, since here in Illinois, we can't talk on our cell phones right. while we're driving at all.
Yeah.
And my Jeep does not sync. Mm. So I need to purchase some new toys to go with my phone anyway. But you know, it lets you customize all that and keep track of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty cool little app. So I'm, you know, hopeful that we'll see in May what I'm reporting as to how it went. And but my goal is to run the whole thing. Walking.
Yeah.
So
now it's just so important. You sound a lot like me. You have to set those goals, and you kind of make that promise to yourself. You know,
mm-hmm.
you just have to take that step. Now the next challenge is, you know, actually going out there. Mm-hmm. I've made the commitment, so it's mm-hmm. getting up off that couch and going out.
I keep blaming it on the snow that won't go away, you know, and all of that. But it's kind of cool because I'm finding tools online too. I'm a very linear person. Mm-hmm. Everything I do, when I lay it out, whether it's a presentation or anything, I have a table, start, stop, and then fill in between. Even my dissertation, I mm-hmm. did that way and all. And so, you know, it's kind of comforting when I find all of these apps and things online that there are a lot of other people like me. Maybe, you know, I'm sure there's a support group or something out there and all. But it's really cool to find other people that have gone through things and they've created mm-hmm. apps and all of that. And so we're doing it. We've been doing it in education mm-hmm. forever. And that, but
do you think it's that way because of your, like your content training and things, you know, being in English and literature and things
that
do
I
you
approach
think that you
things?
Have to, yeah, that you have to, cause I'm kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting here thinking it's like, I can jump, you know, all over the place. And I don't know if, like, the web, you know, with uh-huh. the hyperlink world, it's like just jump from here, you know, go from A to Z to G to M. You know.
Yeah, yeah. No, not
that's
me.
That's interesting.
It is in our different approach. Yeah, because I, you know, I will proudly say diagramming sentences was one of my favorite things to do.
And in instructional design, that's extremely, you know, that you have a set plan. This is the way you go through. You go through this extensive effort on prerequisite analysis and all these things. And that's necessary, you know, again, particularly for somebody learning something new, because there's all these gaps and things and leading a learner through. But the individuality of the learner kind of throws that out sometimes, because you don't want to reteach something, you know, that a student knows inside and out. They get bored when you can take it to that next level. And that's where I see so much promise with this technology, you know, with the personalized learning and things to kind of diagnose some of that. And, you know, we've been seeing that for a long time in technology. But we're getting more advanced from the standard, you know, from the programmed instruction, you know, kind of the linear. We have to have all these different pathways and things depending upon the level of the learner. So,
well, and we've realized how important it is to not only assess but respond to the assessment. It's not just assessing for the sake of doing it. The reason that we assess is so we can see where the weaknesses are and where the strengths are.
Absolutely.
And go from there. So just testing doesn't mean squat. It's just, you know, assigning a number and saying, you got this grade, you have this grade.
Right.
It's, you know, a good teacher, you test and then you realize what's lacking.
Right. It's a snapshot in time.
And build on that. So, yeah. So, you know, and that's hard sometimes to explain to parents that feel like we're assessing too much and it's not necessary. And it's like, but it is a valuable tool for an educator.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what was the name of the app again?
Well, it's Couch to 5K.
Okay, we'll put a link in the show notes.
We will, and I'll keep y'all posted.
Okay, we'll have to hold you to that. Okay, we interrupt this normal Tech Pick of the Week episode, and we've got Mike Gioia back with us, so he's going to add his tech pick. But let me get you up to speed, Mike, real quick. Yesterday, my tech pick was the Hemingway app, which was measuring readability, like grade level scores. You could copy and paste some text into it. And Cindy just finished up doing hers, which was, I think, Couch to 5K Run. She's going to start doing a 5K run.
I've heard of that.
And she had a running app. I told her mine was going to be the Couch to Couch app. So, But what do you have for your tech pick this week?
Well, the little backstory is I needed to replace my wallet.
Like your physical wallet?
My physical.
That you carry in your back pocket?
Carry my credit cards and cash in wallet. Not my Bitcoin wallet or something else.
Probably good you don't have that after that news too, speaking of hacks.
The biggest problem is that I had a trifold wallet, which is humongous, and to put that in your back pocket and like sit on it when you're like driving somewhere is just very uncomfortable. And you know, I got looking at my wallet, and I rarely carry cash, you know, just enough to like if I got in trouble or something, you know, like I could pay for a tank of gas or something like that, or pay like a tow truck or something. But the biggest part was I don't like bulky key rings either, so what was in my wallet was all my rewards cards or my loyalty cards for the different businesses, you know, that I shop at. And I'm like, what a waste of space. Like, you know, I had like 17 of these things. So, you know, Apple had, because I have an iPhone, they had their own little app called Passbook. But I found that Passbook didn't read a lot of these cards because you had to be signed up for that program and everything. So I found another app called Keyring. And Keyring is basically just a app that you can scan in through your camera. You can scan in your barcodes of all your loyalty cards and then take pictures of them. And if the reader that the store has is optical, it'll read the barcode right off your phone. You don't need to, you know, you don't need to tell them the number. And then if it doesn't read it, you have the card and you can tell them the number for them to manually.
I haven't really noticed that, but I would think that there would be more people. Have you seen people hold their phones up to get scanned things like a Walmart or something? Can you do it at Walmart?
Yeah. I think Walmarts are optical. I mean, I haven't seen it much. I've seen it at the malls. I've seen a lot of that happen at the malls a lot, like for the American Eagle or Sephora or something. You hold up your phone and they scan the barcode. It allowed me to eliminate all 17 of those cards that I had in my pocket. Even my Red Cross blood donation card, you know, I was able to scan that one in. for that.
So what type of technology? Is it just like an optical scan, or is it like NFC, or?
It just takes a picture of the barcode and actually identify what type of barcode is. You know, there is 7 to 8 different types of barcodes out there. And then actually you can find that company in their menu, and it'll be like, okay, it'll give it its name and everything. And then it's actually pretty interesting.
Has it worked everywhere that you wanted it to?
Not everywhere. Like, it didn't work at Ace, but that was because Ace uses laser readers, and the lasers won't pick up the barcode because laser readers are looking for the raised edges of the ink, not the picture. They're not taking a picture of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just tell them the number, and they put it in, and it works fine.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, you know, it's really not that big of a deal, you know, because all the time people are like, oh, I have a card, but I forgot.
That's me.
So it works pretty good. And that way I was able to actually take my wallet, my trifold wallet, and actually get just a card wallet, which is very slim. Mm-hmm. It almost looks like a little pocket wallet, and it has actually security features, the block RF reading and stuff for
your
cards.
Get the aluminum foil out.
Yeah, tin hat on, you know. Yeah. You know, that thing is so small now. I mean, it's not even as thick as my phone. And I actually carry it in my front pocket now, which is really, when you're traveling and stuff, a safer place to keep your wallet.
Pocket, yeah.
So I'm happy with it so far.
Okay.
You know, it was nice to get rid of the huge wallet and have something smaller. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. That wraps it up for episode 162 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. Remember that there will be some changes to the iTunes feed, so if you're subscribing through iTunes, please visit our ITC website, and we will have the new RSS feed there for you to resubscribe. We certainly don't want to lose any listeners. We appreciate everyone that takes the time to listen, so thank you. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
Cindy Rich.
Mike Joya.
Keep on learning.